Now, do the new film and publication board regulations stifle free speech? And will they be a hindrance rather than helpful when it comes to curbing the spread of mis and disinformation this election cycle? What is misinformation and disinformation anyway? And who decides? And what is to be done with those who err? A number of media organizations are raising concerns that the new regulations could be used to silence legitimate voices in national debates and are in fact nothing more than a crude attempt at censorship. We're joined now by two guests. Dr. Mashilo Buluka is the CEO of the Film and Publication Board, and William Bird, the Director of Media Monitoring Africa. Thank you to you both. William, I'll start with you. Surely curbing the spread of misinformation in an election cycle, no less, surely that's a good thing. William?
Hi, good morning. Good morning. Yes, it is a good thing, obviously. And I don't think anyone's saying, certainly none of the five media organizations that are challenging this are suggesting that we don't need to. In fact, each of them individually and collectively are doing a range of things to work to mitigate and combat disinformation, including with the IEC.
So what's wrong with these regulations?
So what's wrong with these regulations is a number of things. Firstly, the way that they define mis and disinformation is so broad that almost anything could be considered to be mis and disinformation. The definitions are incredibly vague. So if you were to say something that you say that you believe to be true, even if it's false, that can be considered misinformation, whereas if you spread something that's false and you know it's false, that's disinformation. And if you think about that in relation to the elections, that's obviously something that's just a patently unhelpful definition. So when you introduce a definition that's so broad that it then has the impact of silencing and stifling speech, because it has a chilling effect on freedom of expression, precisely because you're introducing something where there is 150,000 rand, potentially 150,000 rand or 2 year prison sentence. Now, when you're doing that on the basis of no mandates to do so, and when you're trying to do that on the basis of saying that this is linked to other kind of harms, it just introduces the idea and takes us back to what was then the censorship board.
I'll come back to the mandate issue. You're also raising concerns about the process that was followed.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so these regulations just appeared. Now, in any normal circumstance, especially if you're introducing a new crime, which is what they are doing by introducing the crime of mis and disinformation, you'd have to take it through Parliament and a public process. Here, we just saw these regulations appear. There was no public participation. And again, we argue quite strongly that this is not within the mandate and powers of the Film and Publications Board. So it's not to say that they shouldn't be championing and helping to try and raise awareness and combat mis and disinformation, but what they shouldn't be doing is trying to introduce new laws outside of their mandate and scope and trying to silence freedom of expression.
Why is this beyond their mandate?
If you look at the law, it simply isn't within their powers. So the way that they talk about this, they don't have the ability to create new regulations. They don't have the ability to create new laws, effectively, where you say this mis and disinformation. So mis and disinformation isn't referenced anywhere in the existing Film and Publications Amendment Act. Suddenly here they introduce a new definition of it, and it's just completely inappropriate.
So there are concerns also about the punishment for those who fall foul of these new regulations, but also this obligation on the telecoms companies to monitor content, essentially what users are looking at.
Yeah, I mean, and that's it. So even if you manage to clear all of those 55 hurdles as to why these are really bad and challenging, you then get to the point where they're then saying, you know, you're expecting ISPs and beyond that to be able to monitor content. And that, of course, again, raises a whole range of privacy concerns about, you know, you're expecting your Vodacoms and your MTNs and your Cell Cs to be monitoring the kind of content that goes out across their platforms. And that raises another range of concerns. You know, so it's not something that's... Mis and disinformation is clearly a threat. Let's be clear about this. But what we don't want to do is be trying to introduce regulations that attempt to deal with it in a way that are going to limit freedom of expression. All over the world, whenever you've seen these kinds of things that criminalizes mis- and disinformation like this, invariably it results in a substantial clampdown on freedom of expression. And especially in an election period, that's something that we want to avoid at all costs.
Where's the sweet spot, William? I mean, we know well enough the damage caused by, say, Bell Pottinger and other examples. I can point you to July 21, for example. We don't want a repeat of that.
No, exactly. And that's why you do want to be holding people to account for the various crimes that are promoted, online harms that are promoted there. And it's not to say that we shouldn't be finding nuanced ways of dealing and punishing those who do disseminate this. For example, the IEC has a section in its act that says you can't publish false information. So there's already an offence in our law, in the Electoral Act, that deals with this. So the part of the sweet spot is saying you need to find ways, firstly, with the platforms that actively disincentivizes the money that they make from disinformation. So the first step in dealing with this is to make sure that the platforms take action to disincentivize the spread of mis- and disinformation. Now, saying you're going to have a law against those that spread it isn't going to be the thing that's going to stop that from spreading.
Listening to that, thank you, William Byrd. Listening to that is Dr. Mashilo Buluka, who is the CEO of the New Film and Publication Board. Thank you for your time. You've heard the objections. Can you give broadly perhaps a response to the concerns William Byrd and others are raising?
Thank you very much, Bongani, and the listeners. Let me just deal with the last part. Why are we here? Why is misinformation so rife that all the governments throughout the world, even the first democracies, UK, Canada, being the last one to pass a legislation on online safety, is because of the point that William is mentioning around disincentivization. It is because for a long period of time, there was this belief that the big techs would be able to regulate themselves. They haven't regulated themselves. That's why now there's a wide a global response to say we need to deal with this. I think your examples were spot on, without any doubt. The 2021 civil unrest in South Africa, the elections in Kenya, US and Nigeria, all of that points to the fact that the idea of ever thinking that the big techs will be able to regulate themselves is only existing a pipe dream. But not just to deal with that, that's the first point. Then there's another one that I want to deal with, at the mandate. Just to correct that, William is not telling the truth. I want to say this. The Film and Publication Amendment Act of 2019, passed by the South African Parliament, is very clear. It gives the FP the powers to relate to the online space. For that purpose, it defines two sets of acts, sort of two sets of content. One is harmful, the other one is prohibited. And what we mean by that, and I think you'll never find, and you can go even the European Commission, any country, you'll never find the existence of a term called misinformation, disinformation. And we deal with illegal content, as in the UK, restricted content, as in Australia, or prohibited content or harmful content in South Africa. Then out of that, the understanding is, which is the same as the FP Act, then the regulators are given the powers to define what constitutes prohibited or harmful content. In our case, as the FPB, last year we produced guidelines on what constitutes prohibited content, because prohibited, in other words, that which you can say because of the impact that it has, whether incitement or violence, then you can say this kind of content is prohibited. Harmful is the one that has got psychosocial impact. Now, what we have done, we released the regulations, draft regulations for public comments. Media Monitoring Project and other organizations responded to that. They even requested an extension. And we granted that extension. And I think based on that, we finalized the guidelines.
Let me come in here, Dr. Buluka. One of the things that I'm trying to think about is, you're right, I mean, there's worldwide concern about how tech companies are not able to regulate the content that is on their platforms, mostly because of the very nature of those platforms, is that the content is generated by those who are using those platforms. This is a problem that many countries around the world are grappling with. Yet, if there is a sense that perhaps your measures go beyond global norms, these platforms simply may not operate here. But I'll bring one closer to home. I have a public platform from which I broadcast a show such as this. Mistakes can happen. I've had to more than once in my time come back and say, oops, I got that one wrong. That isn't always deliberate. I would fall foul of some of these regulations. Surely that chilling effect concern is a valid one.
It is a valid one, but this issue is that's why there are always measures, even for ourselves. What you normally say is you don't, in the first instance, get fined or guilty. You can, I think, get honest mistakes to happen. That's why what you normally do is say to the online and then for this notice, not necessarily regulation. I think that's the other point that I wanted to correct, that this is not a notice. The Notice of Intent requires a big tech platform to kind of take reasonable steps to ensure that their platforms are not used to distribute this prohibited content, well, including misinformation in the case of South Africa, which is the case. What you do is you will say, what measures have you put in place? Tell us the truth. What measures have you put in place? And then obviously mistakes do happen. But if mistakes do happen, what is it that we do? We as the FPB, based on a complaint that can be raised by the public in this regard, I think just to deal with the point around freedom of expression, we, to avoid FPB acting arbitrarily, the Act is very clear that in case of prohibited content, we don't just act on our own, but we act on the basis of a complaint being laid by a member of the public. That's when we act. And then how do we act? We lies with the platform owner to say that this kind of content is prohibited under the FP Act. Can you look into it and consider taking it down? I think that's an honest mistake. At first, there's no that huge penalty, because I think even when you take you to the enforcement committee, you can still say no, it was an honest mistake, and there won't be any penalty.
Dr. Mashilo, we're going to have to leave it there. The CEO of the Film and Publications Board, also hearing from William Byrd, Director of Media Monitoring Africa. I suspect there's a lot of wiggle room around what the final rules and regulations will be as far as this space is concerned. So much of this, of course, is always a bit of a head. Is a little ahead of regulators, because of course all of this is a new world. It's a brave one, and it can be a dark one as well.